Hello, this is Françoise Mathieu, and I want to welcome you to webinar number three, Identifying Your Warning Signs. So as we've been doing this work for quite a long time, the original Compassion Fatigue Workshop, the very first one that was developed by our team, was actually designed in 2001, 2002. The quick story behind that is that my friend Robin Cameron and I, we were both in the same field. We were both working in crisis environments, women's shelters, those kinds of environments. And we both had the same background training in educational counseling and psychology. And we were looking for resources on the topic when we finally kind of found out the terminology, and we wanted to figure out how we could develop tools to help ourselves as well as our colleagues. So Robin and I, back in the day, really read all the books we could find on the topics related to stress, burnout, and compassion fatigue. And in 2001, that wasn't that difficult because there weren't very many. And what we found is that there was quite a lot on kind of the problem, describing what it looked like. You know, we kind of used to say we could do the morning workshop so everyone would understand what was going on for them, but there weren't a lot of strategies available. There wasn't a lot of research on what worked to reduce compassion fatigue and work-related stress. And we really had to go out on our own and try and find that in a variety of ways. One of the things that we worked through very quickly and learned very quickly is that there were some pretty consistent warning signs that we could all start to identify for ourselves. And as you see, as you'll see in a minute as I talk about it a little bit more, we started realizing that these warning signs are very robust. What that means is I can tell you now, because I know my own warning signs, they have been the same for 15 years. Ever since we've identified these, or even longer now, 16, 17 years, my warning signs are always the same. So what I'm hoping to do today is to get you on your own, personally and at work, to kind of identify what do those warning signs look like for you. And another question to invite you to think about is, are the warning signs the same at home and at work, or are they different? I don't know if you're like me, but I tend to, you know, put my best foot forward at work and I'll bring my best self. And maybe what happens is when I get home, people, you know, in my life get the crumbs, you know. So maybe I'm on all day, I do a good job, I'm patient, and then I get home and I'm completely tanked and I have nothing left to give. So that's what we're going to spend some time doing today. And if we kind of go back and use kind of the traffic lights as an analogy, and this is something that my colleague Stefan was using when he developed the road to mental readiness as well. And we weren't aware of that, interestingly. We were kind of using the same image because I think it's pretty easy to understand. So if you think of the green zone, yellow zone, and red zone, and think about the green zone as being when you are truly at your best. Maybe it's at the end of the summer holiday. Maybe it's, you know, you've just had a very restorative time, or maybe it's when you started out in the field, and for some of you, if you've been around for a while, that may feel like it was quite a long time ago. So the green zone is when we're really at our optimal best. The yellow zone is where we start seeing kind of warning signs in a variety of ways that we're starting to experience effects of stress, and that it's starting to take its toll on us emotionally, psychologically, and physically. And finally, the red zone is, I think all of us know what the red zone looks like. It's when we've absolutely crashed. So by the time people end up on sick leave or on stress leave, they are definitely in the red zone. And what we want to do is want to invite all of us to be able to identify the warning signs before we get into trouble. I'm not saying that we never visit the yellow zone. Of course we do. And maybe there are times where we get even closer to the red zone than other times. But what do the warning signs look like for you personally and individually? Now, we're going to spend some time on that today. But if you're not sure what your warning signs are, I always say ask your loved ones. They will be delighted to tell you because they know. They see the difference, how you behave, how more or less you're sleeping, whether you're more or less patient or irritable, whether you have the energy for extra activities. I always say, you know, even your dog can tell based on how often you walk him or her. So let's take a look at the warning signs and, you know, dive into this a little bit so that you can kind of get a really clear sense of what that looks like. So we like to break them down, and this is from some of the original folks who worked in this field. Lorianne Perlman wrote a really nice book called Transforming the Pain in 1996, and she was inviting people to kind of start thinking about it in this way. And I like to call them the big three warning signs. Now, as I go through the warning signs, you're all probably going to recognize many of them in yourselves, and you may very well have more than three, but I want to kind of think about what are the ones that consistently come back over and over again, and do you have a number one physical warning sign? Do you have a number one behavior that shows up when you're in the yellow zone? And do you have a number one kind of emotional warning sign? And you're going to see as we go through them that, of course, there's overlap between these. It's not this perfect division. Some emotional warning signs can also be physical or behavioral. But I want to invite you to spend a little bit of time, first of all, thinking about how does your body let you know when you're headed for trouble? So working from the top of your head all the way down, you know, are you someone who gets regular migraines when you're stressed or maybe when the climate has changed outside? I have a friend who's very sensitive to the change in pressure, and so she knows when the storm's coming because she gets a migraine. So stress-related headaches, maybe you've had an eye twitch, and that's often related to sleep deprivation. Maybe you grind your teeth at night to the degree that you've started grinding your teeth, and maybe even the dentist has recommended you wear a mouth guard. Maybe you wake up with, or you develop over the day, tight neck and shoulder. I know that that's the one I have, the traps, you know, which are the, you see in this picture here, this person's kind of holding her neck. So that's been associated with kind of carrying the burdens of the world, you know, literally on our shoulder. Maybe you get low back pain. Maybe you get heartburn, reflux. Maybe you have irritable bowel syndrome, which if you have IBS, you know that there is a huge component, of course, that's related to lifestyle and heredity, but there's also a big component that's related to stress. I have a lot of family members who suffer from IBS, and of course they need to eat right, but they also know that, as they say, you know, the gut has been called the second brain. The gut, you know, when we say something's a gut feeling, that's for a really good reason. Our gut does pick up on what's going on and let us know sometimes that things are not great. Maybe you get rashes or hives if you're someone who has a tendency towards eczema or psoriasis, maybe you'll get a flare-up. So just pick your number one. What is your number one physical warning sign? And kind of, if you're willing, write down what is a consistent kind of pattern when that starts emerging? I know, for example, that when I go on holidays, often I get sick. So it's not a coincidence that I worked really hard this last 3 months. I was on the road almost all the time. I was delivering tons of training. It was very cool, but it was also very hectic. And I knew last week I was supposed to be on holidays, and I knew the minute I would go on vacation, I would get sick. And of course, I develop bronchitis. I don't get sick very often, and I often don't get sick when I can't afford to. But the minute that I could, you know, kind of relax, I think that my immune system just said, okay, you've been pushing this too hard. Now we're going to get ourselves a nice little virus. So really I want to invite you to think about what is your number one physical warning sign, and is there a way in the future that you could recognize that a little bit earlier? I know, for example, that I had the first warning sign that I was developing some kind of flu bug because I woke up one morning and I was actually about to deliver a training to 900 people on that day, and I had a very, very sore throat and kind of this achy feeling. So I knew that was my warning sign. I have a friend who has a very delicate stomach, and when she's stressed, she will call it food poisoning, but I don't think it's food poisoning. She will be violently ill. In the middle of the night, she'll wake up, and at some point, this was happening so often that I said to her, are you sure this is not stress-related? And finally, she acknowledged, you know, it took some time, that that's what was happening. Her body was letting her know in some ways that things were not okay. There was a wonderful book that was written about this. Some of you may know Gabor Mate. Gabor Mate is a physician whose mother survived the Holocaust and moved here, I believe, from Hungary. And he became a physician, a doctor in Vancouver, and he worked for many years in the downtown east side, the lower east side of Vancouver, with drug addicts. So he was doing some really interesting, very challenging work. And Gabor Maté started becoming interested in kind of patterns of what he calls, and this is the name of his book, When the Body Says No. And as he says in his book, the immune system does not live outside of and detached from daily experience. Maybe some of you know someone, or maybe yourself, have developed chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia or something similar. And it's not saying, this is not the old saying, oh, it's all in your head. That's not what I'm saying at all. What we're starting to realize with more and more research is that chronic stress does damage eventually the immune system. And if you think about it, even if you don't know a lot about biology, which I'll be honest with you, I'm not an expert in biology or neurobiology or even the immune system, but intellectually it just makes sense that if you're in a constant state of stress, you're also in a constant state of inflammation. And we know that when we're in a constant state of inflammation, eventually that catches up with us, you know, and we develop stress-related illnesses or other kind of illnesses that are basically a result of our body just at some point catching up and crashing and saying, that's enough, I can't take it anymore. There's some new research on this, I'll go back to that in another webinar, that's been referred to as toxic stress. And it's referring to not just kind of day-to-day stressors that we all live in, but some really interesting research looking at people who live in a constant state of danger. So an example, there was a recent New York Times article that looked at the rate of birth complications in African American women. And it's found to be, regardless of their education or financial means, African American women have a higher rate of complications during birth. And one of the suggestions is that obviously living currently in the United States as an African American woman can increase your day-to-day toxic load, and there's some connection being made between the immune system and the level of stress we all live in. So number one, what are your physical warning signs? So just invite you to think about that or jot that down. And secondly, to think about what are some behavioral warning signs when you're getting close to the red zone or you're in the yellow zone. What does that look like for you? I'm showing here a picture of a show that some of you are an actor in, a show that some of you may have seen. It was called Nurse Jackie, and it was actually an excellent show. I watched it on iTunes, but I believe it was a Showcase, I seem to recall. And it was a really interesting fictionalized TV show about a nurse who became addicted to opioids, which we know is a very common thing these days. And like many nurses, she injured her back doing a patient lift or a transfer and eventually became a drug addict. And it's a great show, and it really kind of highlights, first of all, the tragic reality of addiction and how it can affect so many people, and also the ways in which she's kind of navigating dealing with this, but also how her relapse is brought on by a lot of, you know, personal and work-related stresses of working in a busy hospital emergency ward. We know that many of us, and I hope you understand, I say this with absolutely no judgment in any way, a lot of us turn to drugs and alcohol to numb out. We've called that phenomena of kind of numbing out, it's been called self-medication. Now, there's lots of ways to self-medicate. You know, many of us choose drugs or alcohol, but other people, there's other ways to do it. And I want to invite you to think about, how do you transition when you're really close to the red zone, when you're very depleted? How does that look like compared to when you're feeling really great? So let me give you a couple of examples. And again, I invite you to assess that for yourself. You don't need to tell anybody about this, but just, you know, be honest with yourself. Which are some of the things that you do when you're really tapped out? And they're kind of a way of checking out. Now, for some of us, it's drugs and alcohol. For other people, it's watching an incredibly large volume of television or going into the net and not resurfacing for hours. And as I often say, and that's definitely one of mine, like if I have been working too hard and I'm just completely tapped out, I will watch way too much Netflix and I'm going to watch things that are different than when I'm well. So when I'm feeling really good, I may actually read a book at night or a magazine, or I may watch a funny show on Netflix that has nothing to do with trauma or dark things. But when I'm not feeling great, I remember at some point watching all 7 seasons of Breaking Bad, you know, instead of going outside in the sun. Some law enforcement folks, some police officers have called it, they call it going off duty, where they come home from their job and they might sit and watch, you know, 5 hours of sports, completely zoning out. Or maybe your solution is shopping. And we know that there's a big difference between buying things because we need them and retail therapy. You know what I'm talking about. It could be gambling. It could be eating. I have a friend who works in a very high trauma, high stressful job, and she's openly acknowledged that when she's burnt out, she will go home and binge on sugar. That's her drug. And she tried at some point to stop eating sugar, which for some people, I don't know what you're like, but for some people, sugar is not a big deal. But for her, it's her thing. And so she might eat, you know, a dozen donuts and feel completely kind of numbed out, you know, getting that sugar high. For other people, it's carbs. I think we can all agree that when we're stressed, it's very rare that we crave, you know, broccoli and carrots. We crave sugar, salt, and fat. And so again, with no judgment, I'm inviting you to think about what are some of the things that you've noticed when you are tapped out that you do not as a, you might think of them as a way to refuel, but what's actually happening is you're using them to zone out. Another good example is literally doing nothing. And can we agree that sometimes doing nothing is exactly what you need to do? But, you know, again, there's a really big difference between sitting down for an hour or two and watching your favorite show or your sports and spending 8 hours doing that. And so it's just an invitation with compassion, like no judgment, but to kind of look at the patterns of what you're noticing in yourself. Another behavioral warning sign are blurred boundaries. I don't know if you remember watching the movie Bridesmaids. I think a lot of us saw it. And there's a point in the movie where Melissa McCarthy, who's hilarious, brings back like 9 golden retriever puppies from like the wedding or something. They were given away as party favors. And she walks in the door and she's literally got 9 dogs on a leash. And she's like, whoa, I think I overextended myself. So there are times where when we're tapped out, we actually work harder. And we have a hard time letting things go or not, we've also called it over-functioning, rescuing. Again, that might not be your warning sign. I know that when I'm getting close to the red zone, I tend to do that, which is kind of confusing to other people because they're seeing me as kind of more and more engaged. But what I tend to do is I say yes to too many things. It's kind of like I get this superhero mentality, you know, when I'm thinking, yes, I'll take care of this. Yes, I'll take care of you. You're in crisis. You call me anytime. And it's like I basically am kind of escaping into overwork or feeling needed. This can also happen in our personal lives where I may end up, you know, wanting to be the solution lady to everybody because in a way I'm feeling kind of rough. And so being alone with my own thoughts might not be very comfortable. We definitely have seen, this is a picture, as you see, of a couple who are in their business suits on the beach, and so they're supposed to be on holidays, but they actually can't switch off. And again, that might not be yours, but we've also found that workaholism is another warning sign where you can never stop. And listen, I understand we all have more work than we'll have time to do, ever, right? The demands are always outweighing what we can provide, but there are times in which basically I know some folks are just afraid to get off the track because it's also another way to kind of not feel anything. Now, this is different from having massive deadlines that are being put upon us. Like, I'm not talking about workaholism because the demand is so huge and if you don't do it, you'll lose your job. I'm talking about noticing a pattern of behaviors in yourself about some of the choices you're making. So the third one are emotional warning signs. Now, there's lots of them, and again, if you want to read more about that, you can go on our website. We have a free resource. I believe it's called Warning Signs, and we talk about these in greater detail. And, you know, an example would be you're watching the Fluffy Kittens, you know, toilet paper commercial on TV, and you start to cry. or you have a reaction that is really quite different from what everyone else around you is having. Now, that might be that you're numb, or that you're really enraged and they're not, or it might also be that you have a really strong reaction to something that's really not that big a deal when you compare yourself to other people. Now, it could also have to do with, you know, sex and intimacy, and it's something we don't talk about very much. So if you're in a relationship with another person and you do this very demanding job, have you noticed that it's had an impact on your interest in, you know, engaging in any type of intimate behavior with your partner? And, you know, what I often hear from folks who work in our demanding fields is that they feel like they've given all day. Everyone seems to want, you know, their time. And when they go home, and maybe you have children, so maybe you've dealt with the kids in your lives, and finally everyone's in bed and you're like, I just get half an hour to myself. And then all of a sudden, if you have a significant other, they pop out of the woodwork and they're like, hey, hey, hey. And you're thinking, are you kidding me right now? I got nothing. You know, I've given all day. I don't want to spend time with another person. And these are in healthy relationships. I'm not even talking about situations where, you know, the relationship is less than ideal. I can tell you that for me, because I know my warning signs, my number one emotional warning sign is irritability. And I notice that because I get a low tolerance for fluffy things. So what I mean by that is, if you recall in my other webinar, I talked about there was a time where I was working somewhere where the cheerfulness of the secretary at the front of the desk irritated me beyond belief. She was a lovely person. She had a great attitude and outlook towards life. And somehow that sunny, cheerful smile, I used to be like, oh, I got nothing. You're getting on my nerves. And I found the same at home. So I will become like a drill sergeant. And I don't know if you can relate to that. When I'm in the yellow zone, I don't have patience for talk about things that are not action-oriented. So literally, I might come home and my son wants to talk about, I don't know, like yesterday he wanted to show me some cool rap video. And yesterday I was in a really good place. I was like, sure, show me that. But when I'm in the yellow zone, I might start internally drumming my fingers and thinking about the massive to-do list that I have. So it's kind of I lose my ability to experience joy and just be in the moment. And that's a very big warning sign for me. So these are very individual, and you really need to have a think about what is it for you. Maybe it's insomnia. Maybe it's what's called hypersomnia, which is actually that you oversleep because you're so taxed that you just check out. And you're not just oversleeping because you're tired. And I think all of us get to know the difference between sleeping because we're tired and sleeping because we are just in an avoidance mode. So this becomes a really, I know it sounds really simple, but I really invite you to think about what are your big three warning signs. So what's your number one physical warning sign? What's your number one behavioral warning sign? What's your number one emotional warning sign? And my second question to you is, how are they different at home and at work? So let's start with home. Would you agree that your yellow zone at home might look quite different than your yellow zone at work? So as I said before, maybe you're still showing your best self at work, but when you go home, you completely check out. And what would that look like? So if I was your friend, or if I was in a relationship with you, or you were my parent, how would I know you're in the yellow zone? And secondly, what could I do to help? How could I best support you? So because I spend a lot of time thinking about these things, I had and have had a conversation with my family about this because, you know, it's not easy always to live with me. I mean, I'm pretty nice and stuff, but, you know, I come back from trips and sometimes I'm exhausted, and or maybe I would come back from spending a day working with soldiers who'd had some really difficult things happen to them. And what I realized I needed to do is, first of all, not assume that people are mind readers. You know, there's no such thing as telepathy. It doesn't work. And so I shouldn't just assume that the way that I drop my briefcase and my lunch bag when I walk in the door, that my entire family is supposed to know what I need. And so I had some brief conversations over the years with my loved ones to say, listen, when I walk in the door, I need a few minutes. First of all, I don't know what you do and what your transition activities are, but the number one thing I do, even if I'm dressed in jeans and t-shirt, which is how I dress most days, I like to go and change. It's like a ritual. It's kind of taking off my day. I like to go and wash out my lunch stuff. You know, like, they're not big deals, but they're just a way for me to not walk in the door and be called upon by whoever needs me. I don't return phone calls unless they're crisis, and that's really upset some of my family members. I know my mom wishes I called more often. I just feel like I've been on all day, and I know you are too, and I need certain things so that I can reset. So can you have that conversation with your loved ones? And when I say loved ones, they may not be people who live with you, whoever is important to you in your life, so that, first of all, they don't take your behavior personally and that they also know what you need. I used to have an aunt who lived with us, and she moved in with us when I was around 12 or 13. And she was not a morning person at all. And at first I didn't know that because I'm pretty chatty in the morning, blah, 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 you know. And finally she sat me down and she said, listen, it's absolutely no offense, but in the morning I don't want to talk. So then it became okay because she could be silently drinking her coffee and I didn't start thinking, well, what's her problem? Is she mad at me? You know, I think that sometimes communication can go a really long way to clarifying some things that sometimes we can end up, you know, misreading and misrepresenting. Second part of your reflection activity, what does your yellow zone look like at work? When you're close to the, you know, kind of you're starting to notice the warning signs, emotionally, physically, and behaviorally, how do you change? So I know that for me, when I'm in the yellow zone, I may avoid chit-chat with colleagues. So I may skip the lunchroom if you still have a lunchroom, and I know some of you don't even have a lunch break, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, I sometimes will feel like I don't want to be with other people. And sometimes that's actually a really good decision. But what I did is I explained to my colleagues, listen, it's nothing personal. When I'm in the yellow zone, I just need to be alone, but I'm not mad at you. So just these little things can really help understand and kind of avoid some workplace conflict that is actually, quite frankly, preventable. Another one might be when I'm in the yellow zone and I look, you know, grumpy and unapproachable, I actually want you to say, hey, you know, we're going out for a walk, or we're going to go spend 5 minutes outside, or, you know, whatever. So have a conversation with the colleagues that you care about and that you trust so that you can develop a shared understanding for what this looks like. And as I said, we can avoid a lot of unnecessary conflict and kind of personalizing what someone else is doing when, in fact, it's probably got nothing to do with you. So I hope that this is helpful for you, and what I invite you to do now is after you've established your warning sign, your big threes, go and check them out with someone you trust. Go talk to your bestie. Go talk to, you know, someone that you care about who really knows you and ask them, what do you think my big three warning signs are? My friend who had the quote-unquote food poisoning, she really thought it was food poisoning. Until at some point, and I mean, she's one of my best friends, I sat her down and I said, listen, sweetheart, like, nobody gets food poisoning every week. Like, not all the restaurants in our town are poisoned. That's impossible. I said, I think this is a stress reaction. And at first, you know, she wasn't thrilled about that. But the more she thought about it, the more she was like, you know what, I think you're right. So sometimes we need to look at some patterns before we get a sense of this. And so now I know that when I've overworked myself, I'm going to lose my voice and I'm going to get some type of bronchitis or a cold. It sucks. And sometimes I can also preempt that. But there's other times where I know. You know, my son was in the same house as me. He did not get sick at all. Same virus, right? This has also got to do with our own vulnerability factors and how much we're kind of wearing ourselves out. So again, of course, you have questions, just get in touch with us. Don't hesitate. And also, do go to our website, tendacademy.ca. Go to resources and you'll see a nice long conversation about your warning signs, and you can kind of go through the checklist and establish what's true for you and, you know, where you can start identifying the warning signs.